The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Good morning, everyone. This is actually Andrew Locher. I'm subbing in for Stephen Flurry, who's busy with summer camp and the public appearance campaigns. He'll be back tomorrow, as I understand it. In the studio here with Dwight Falk, Josh Sloan, and David Vahil downstairs, we have quite a team that produces these programs. There's a team that helps do some research and put things together. Richard Palmer sent me some news items just a few minutes ago that I won't get to because I need more time than that to digest. But it really is quite an effort to put together these programs for you, and we hope that you really enjoy them. For today's program, I want to reflect on some thoughts that I've had over the past 10 days. Selfish, I know, but I think there's good reason to talk about some of the experiences I've been really kind of blessed to be a part of. I attended the personal appearance campaigns or public appearance campaigns. I've been able to talk with our regional directors from all over the world about the response to those campaigns and planning some more for the future. Yesterday, I was able to speak with Mr. McDonald, who's down with Brent Noctegal and his family in Israel. It really is a global work. There's so much going on. Also, over the past week, we've been working on the coming school year for Imperial Academy and Armstrong College. And then, as I'll talk about at the end of today's program, I've been able to interact with some of our teens at a few of the camp activities. Well, it's interesting to take a look at what's going on in the world, to listen to the news stories just at the top of this program here about the South Koreans firing their weapons, warning shots at Russian aircraft. That's pretty dramatic. That doesn't happen every day. It is becoming increasingly dangerous. Venezuela this morning reported that half of their country was blacked out or there was no power. And there's just absolute misery in that nation. A nation that could serve as a good example of what could happen if we change some of our policies and our politics here in the United States. What I find interesting is they have this blackout, and yet they're one of the most oil-rich nations in the world. And it really does prove the point that government is everything. You can have resources, you can have a good climate, but if you don't have godly leadership, or proper leadership, I should say, there's no godly leadership really anywhere in this world outside of God's church. But if you don't have government leadership, things break down. The Venezuelans are accusing the United States of using an electromagnetic pulse weapon that took out their power. There's a lot of accusation out there. There are wild actions and threats by the Iranians. As you heard yesterday on the program, the Royal Navy is anemic. How can the Royal Navy have diminished to such a feeble level where we can't even escort a few ships away from their home ports? Really, that was a stunning reality yesterday to hear about that. Of course, there's extreme division in the United States. I watched just a brief video this morning of a couple police officers in New York City being harassed by people that they're trying to protect and serve. And they were pelted, I guess, with some objects. They had a lot of water splashed on them. Everybody's laughing. It's a big joke just to, you know, go out there and attack those that are trying to serve. It is a way of bringing about anarchy in so many ways. Well, for the past year or more, I've read with some interest about different nuclear accidents. I'm thinking about a message that I'd like to give around the Feast of Trumpets. And you can study quite a bit about Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, the Fukushima disaster with the earthquake. Then there are different military mishaps with nuclear weapons. It caused me to think a lot about nuclear war. Because as you know, this world has detonated nuclear bombs in testing and in war. In fact, in my notes, I was going to say that we've detonated dozens of bombs. And yet I thought, well, I better check that to make sure. It seems like that might be a little low in the number of detonations. According to armscontrol.org, in February 2019, they reported that there have been 2,056 nuclear test explosions since mankind developed atomic weapons. That doesn't include weapons that were used in Japan. The last Trumpet Daily radio program I gave had a segment about the Israeli raid on the Iraqi reactor back in June 1981. And that brave attack, very brazen in so many ways, and really thought to be an impossible mission, that halted Saddam Hussein's nuclear program. It's interesting to watch how the world is responding to Iran, to their quest to have nuclear weapons at their disposal. If you know much about prophecy, the king of the South, radical Islam headed by Iran, the prospect of them bearing and potentially using nuclear weapons is something to really think about. Mankind exploded their first nuclear bomb in a test codenamed Trinity. The U.S. Army detonated this 22-kiloton device at 5:29 a.m. on July 16th, 1945. If you're watching our YouTube stream right now, they're showing some footage of, I believe that was some of the newest footage released from some of these tests, and perhaps that's even the Trinity test. I think it is. Mankind has lived with nuclear weapons for 74 years now. I believe it was earlier this year that they released that test footage. I went back looking for some clips to show of that. And some of the footage, there was a little dramatic reenactment of some things. But the shock on the faces of those that were present for those tests is really something to behold. I think we're so used to or callous to a nuclear explosion because we've seen the video footage of those detonations, or we've seen the aftermath in Japan. There is a certain reality out there that is really very troubling, you could say. 3 weeks after they tested that nuclear device, the Trinity explosion, 3 weeks later, they used those weapons against the Japanese to bring about the end of World War II. Now, that's an interesting date. July 16th. There's a lot of websites where you can go to this day in history. July 16th, 1969 marked the 50-year anniversary of the launch of the Apollo 11 mission. We put men on the moon, and as was brought out in speeches, we returned them home safely, probably equally as hard, if not more difficult, to send them there and bring them back home. That mission was launched on July 16th, 50 years ago. 4 days after the launch on July 20th, mankind walked on the moon. How inspiring. I heard an NPR story yesterday where they say if you have the right equipment or if you use satellites, you could still see the marks of the astronauts' feet as they shuffled about the surface of the moon. That inspiring event took place 24 years after the development of nuclear weapons. The Manhattan Project, also another scientific marvel. As Stephen Fleury explained during his campaign message in Sacramento, July 16th also has other significant meaning for God's church. And really the most important event, perhaps, on July 16th in the history of mankind. July 16th, 1989 marked the day that God began to put Revelation back into his true church. Mr. Stephen Fleury was the first to read a draft copy of Malachi's message on that day. And it fulfilled a prophecy you can read about and study in James chapter 5, verses 17 and 18. Now, that's another subject altogether, a fascinating subject. You can request our booklet, The Epistle of James. You could do so on our website, www.thetrumpet.com. Go to the literature tab and make that request. So much happened on July 16th. As I mentioned, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the NASA moon landing. For a decade surrounding that event, mankind's attention shifted from the world toward the heavens. The space age inspired a generation of youth to study science and mathematics. Technology caused us to expand our vision and put technology and science toward a positive use. Not everything was positive, of course, but it did inspire a generation to try to achieve the impossible. Today, if you look at the top five technology industries or the companies, their combined net worth is $3 trillion. Talk about abundant resources. And then if you look at the focus of that technology today, it's more on communications, making life easier on Earth. Technology today, at least from my perspective, causes us to look inward, to perhaps connect with the world, but in a very impersonal way, over devices, through text messaging, whatever it is. It's a very different technology. Looking back over the last 50 years, so many amazing discoveries. And yet you find so many evils associated with some of that technological advancement. I think it just proves that evil accompanies mankind's technology because mankind is out of their league without God's influence. And that's what you see in the world around us. Thinking back now to the Cold War, the end of the Cold War, President Reagan's strength, Margaret Thatcher's strength as well. The prospect of nuclear conflict was on everybody's mind. I remember graduating high school as 18 years old. The movie Top Gun came out. And it's funny because several young men enrolled in the military. They enlisted in the military. I enrolled in a reserve officer training program at the University of Colorado. And sad to say, I probably was heavily influenced by Top Gun. Turns out that was a Hollywood version of the military. Wasn't exactly the same. Not all these dashing pilots and volleyball and just flying off aircraft carriers and having a lot of fun. I'm sure some of that exists out there. I think they're releasing a sequel to that movie coming out. But I wanted to fly helicopters for the military. It was a time that I felt rather patriotic. I was 18. The whole world was before me. I remember getting into that program and the challenges. You expect to be challenged physically. And it was. And at the same time, it was very tense geopolitically. Everybody knew something could happen, and it would only be a matter of moments before everything could change. That's a reality. And that reality hasn't changed. In fact, it's become more deadly. Mr. Armstrong gave a memorable sermon in 1982 where he tackled this subject. I'd like to play a clip from that. The title of the sermon was "The Unthinkable Will Happen."
Well, brethren, I guess it's still the same old thing. There is both good news and bad news. And there's some wonderfully good news, clear beyond human comprehension, coming. But there's some bad news still, completely beyond comprehension, that is coming first. And God has told us to prepare for it, and He's shown us how He's going to protect us. But the unthinkable is coming. There's an article coming in the Plain Truth, which I saw yesterday. Let me see. I don't know that I have it. I guess I have the title of it here. It'll probably be in the August number, maybe September. Humanity won't end in a nuclear holocaust. As a matter of fact, it'll be the lead article in the Plain Truth. And we've already approved the cover for it. I haven't read all of the article myself, but I want to read you just a little bit of it. It's pretty much built around a quotation from a former Harvard professor who gave this report to the Plain Truth, who's now president of the Physicians for Social Responsibility. And this is the quote: "Survival is the only issue that matters now. The other issues pale into total insignificance if we don't do anything about it, that is, the nuclear war threat, within 10 to 20 years, we'll all be killed anyhow. And most people don't realize what the hydrogen bomb will do. There's a great deal of talk about it, but it seems that in television, they're afraid to show you the reality of it and what really will happen. And it is going to happen. Well, I'll come to that, but I want to read a description that is here, and this is giving you a little bit of advance peek into the coming plain truth, but I think it's good for us to have it now anyway.
A little bit longer clip there, but I wanted to give you some of the background. The Plain Truth magazine interviewed a former Harvard professor that had some insight, did some studies into the after effects of a nuclear explosion. And Mr. Armstrong said at the beginning there that God has told us to prepare for it. He has shown us how he is going to protect us. That quote that founded the article from the Harvard professor said, "Survival is the only issue that matters now. The other issues pale into total insignificance if we don't do anything about it. That is the nuclear war threat. Within 10 to 20 years, we'll all be killed anyhow." What a dismal outlook. And you can understand why many scientists are atheistic or educators or intellectuals, because they don't count God into the equation. But God has shown us how to prepare. He's shown us how he's going to protect us. It's estimated today that there are nearly 14,000 nuclear weapons available for use by at least 9 different countries. They're bigger, more efficient, and more accurate than when they were first developed. And it seems that mankind has gotten pretty used to living with nuclear weapons over the past 74 years. God blames false prophets and lukewarm preachers for that sad condition in humanity. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 13 and 14 reads, "For from the least of them, even unto the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness." It's all inward. It's all selfish. "And from the prophet, even unto the priest, everyone deals falsely. They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace." That's God's perspective. That's his correction for end time ministers, priests, and prophets that don't proclaim God's message. This world has never been further from peace than it is right now. As Mr. Stephen Fleury brought out in his latest round of campaign messages on the West Coast, the world is arming itself. For the past 10 days, I've heard a sermon or a campaign message or participated in some form of God's warning, and it has really impacted my thinking. God's true church is not saying the smooth things. Mr. Armstrong didn't say the smooth things. There is a reality out there that we have to prepare for, because as I'll get to in just a moment, what we find is we just have moments to respond. 3 weeks ago, there was an article on Fox News' website, and it was quoting an Air Force chief about how the United States would respond to a nuclear attack, a Russian nuclear attack. It's an interesting article, somewhat predictable. I think we've all heard a lot about this potential scenario. The article reads, "Red lights start flashing in rapid succession. Space-based infrared sensors detect a heat signature. Somebody calls the president. And in what may feel like a matter of seconds, the United States launches an immediate massive counterattack. F-35s and B-2 bombers, nuclear-armed Navy submarines and missile-armed destroyers, ground-based interceptors and satellites, all are instantly thrust into action. Why? An enemy has launched a nuclear attack on the United States homeland. An intercontinental ballistic missile packed with destructive powers heading toward North America. Just what would the U.S. do? Are there a series of steps, protocols, and instant counterattack plans to put in motion instantly? According to the United States Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein, the answer is yes. My thoughts here, just seconds to respond. Life and death situation, how do you get ready for something like that? Well, you have to train your mind. You have to take on a certain mindset. You have to drill and practice, and you must be ready to act. This chief, this Air Force chief, said the first step is to call NATO. He said, I fully expect three lights to light up on my red switch phone in my office. The first call will be to the Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, who will tell me what he needs to join NATO forces to halt enemy activity and blunt their objectives. By virtue of the speed with which air and space component deploys and employs, he expects us, the U.S. Air Force, to be the first to arrive at his halt and blunt the force of the enemy. Step number two, call NORAD. As soon as I hang up with the NATO commander, there will be two other lights blinking, and I'll talk to the NORTHCOM NORAD commander, and he'll tell me what he needs to support his increased footprint for homeland defense. The third step, nuclear-armed submarines. But then there'll be one more blinking light on the phone waiting for me, and that will be STRATCOM, Commander John Hayden. And he'll tell me what he needs to generate the nuclear forces required for a safe, secure, and effective deterrent against a nuclear-armed adversary. He concludes by saying, every one of these missions is no fail, and every one of these missions needs to be accomplished simultaneously. It would be chaotic. Everything happens within a few minutes. Something like this. Clip number two.
159er.
Check none.
This president is presently in direct communication.
Real privilege and pleasure.
That pause message at this time.
There are three Soviet tactics deployed.
Current world intelligence situation, and you might pay particular note to the nuclear submarines off the east and west coast.
Having already captured NATO advanced positions.
Hey, any of you guys hear anything about an alert?
I really don't think either side wants to be the first to use a nuclear device.
It's not a question of who, but where.
East Germany sealed off the borders to West Berlin.
It's not
going to
happen.
It's crazy, but not that crazy.
I don't believe this is happening.
We have a massive attack against the U.S. at this time. ICBMs. Over 300 missiles inbound now.
Either we fired first, and they're going to try to hit what's left. But they fired first, and we just got our missiles out of the ground in time.
If you're watching the video stream of our program today on YouTube, you'll just have watched a trailer for a 1983 TV movie entitled The Day After. I remember that movie. Perhaps you do too. According to Tribune Media sources, The Day After is an American television film that first aired on November 20th, 1983 on ABC Television Network. More than 100 million people in nearly 39 million households watched the program during its initial broadcast. It was the seventh highest rated non-sports show up to that time, and it set a record as the highest rated television film in history. The film postulates a fictional war between NATO forces and the Warsaw Pact countries that rapidly escalates into a full-scale nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union. The action itself focuses on the residents of Lawrence, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, as well as several family farms situated near nuclear missile silos. It is kind of a chilling video and a terrifying reality that we face. Well, we'll catch our breath for a minute. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and pick up with the subject. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Program.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. Request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, thank you for listening today. This is Andrew Locher. I'm a guest host for Mr. Stephen Fleury. He'll be back tomorrow with the program. One of the most fearful aspects of nuclear war is not so much the bomb blast. I don't think people fear that too much. It'll just be over in just a matter of seconds. But more of the focus, more of the fear is on surviving and trying to live in a world after nuclear war. That's what the Day After movie portrayed, life leading up to. Just a brief scene, probably a minute or two long in the movie, just a day or two of the attack, and then life after, the day after the bombs explode. The world's moving in that direction. Are we prepared? Do we have a plan? Well, if you attend one of our public appearance campaigns, you'll hear how to prepare. As Mr. Armstrong said, we know how to prepare. We know that God will protect us. If you go to a campaign lecture, you're not going to be told to build a bunker. You're not going to be told to store emergency rations. Rather, what we focus on is a commitment to God. Mr. Armstrong gave that sermon that we listened to about 1 year prior to the Day After movie. And then the movie aired, and about 30 days after that movie hit the air, this coworker letter was released on December 18th, 1983. He said, just how serious is the threat of nuclear war? And how imminent is such an unthinkable catastrophe? Millions are deeply concerned. More than 100 million Americans watched the televised movie the day after on November 20th. And to just paraphrase a little bit what he said here, for sake of time, he said half or probably most of the viewers, as soon as the video ended or the movie ended, they tuned out. It was pretty emotional. And yet ABC television carried on with a discussion, a panel of experts that talked about the sobering reality of the events that were just depicted on screen. Diplomats, scientists, experts, all gathering together. Mr. Armstrong said that discussion was seriously significant. The discussion subject was primarily, quote, is there time to prevent this erasure of all humanity, this rendering extinct the entire human race? Not one of those experts, Mr. Armstrong said, had any solution. They were simply a group of bewildered men. He says they were pretty well agreed on some things. If a madman or even a small nation started a small nuclear attack on another small nation, it would start a chain reaction. There could be no stopping until all mankind was blasted off this earth. That's what Mr. Armstrong quoted in his coworker letter, and that's what the Bible teaches. You can look at Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. It says, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. For the elect's sake, for those that have this truth, that have acted on it, they are humanity's hope. They're relying on us, unbeknownst to them. Those days shall be shortened, but only after humanity brings itself to the brink of destruction. Now, I find it interesting that Hollywood has only produced a very small number of real-life movies or TV shows about nuclear war. It was a record-breaking event. I mean, that today they seem to go back and remake old sitcoms, and they reuse old things that have done well, and yet you don't see a remake of The Day After. Mr. Armstrong said that for most people, they don't want to watch that. They don't want to think of the reality. I pulled up a list of the top 10 movies that had to do with nuclear war, and I found it pretty interesting. It's actually a list of 14 movies here. Four of those movies, of the best realistic nuclear war movies, four of them were produced in the 1960s. Seven of them were produced in the 80s. Two in the 1990s. And just one in 2009, 10 years ago. If you just look at what was happening in the world, well, there was a Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s. And, of course, the 80s brought about the height of the Cold War. The movie The Day After is ranked number 3 on this website. Then War Games, that was taped in the 60s. And then the most popular, best movie, according to them, was called Threads. I'm not familiar with that one. It was taped in 1984. Mankind doesn't want to think about this reality. It's pretty horrifying to try to wrap your mind around. But just ignoring it doesn't change what's coming. We can't just sit on this information, on this truth. Now, I had some other articles here about new weapon systems being developed. They're hypersonic weapons, lasers. The United States Air Force will soon deploy new intercontinental ballistic missiles. The Trumpet magazine, the Trumpet Daily Radio program, the Key of David, they all keep us well informed about the coming powers and the weapon systems and their acquisitions. Prophecy talks about a coming global conflict. And as Christ said in Matthew 24, the likes of which this world has never seen. It's never seen anything like that. What a world we live in. And that has been on my mind a fair bit over the past 10 days. Mr. Stephen Fleury gave 3 different campaign messages in Phoenix, Los Angeles, and Sacramento. And that follows up other campaign messages in New York City, in Memphis, Spokane, up in Red Deer, Alberta. Gerald Fleury's been on the campaign tour visiting Chicago, Portland, Tampa. It's all over the place. We're out there talking. We're out there warning. These compelling messages impact those that come to listen. Just the West Coast tour that we just did, thousands of people were invited and hundreds attended. We have dangerous, sobering, and at the same time, the most inspiring information a human can possess. The Trumpet subscribers, co-workers attending were the target audience, but I can tell you from personal experience that message resonated with those of us in the church too. 2 Timothy 3 verse 1 begins, says, "This know also, that in the last days dangerous times shall come." Those times are here. And more of our subscribers are finding proof of that in fulfilled prophecy. They're attuned to God's message. They're attending our personal appearance campaigns. The month of August, Mr. Stephen Fleury intends to visit 4 more cities. August 4th, he'll be in Toronto, Ontario. August 5th, Raleigh, North Carolina. A 2-day event is planned in Detroit, Michigan on August 18th and 19th. And then finally, on August 20th, he'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio. More campaigns are scheduled beyond that. But I wanted to encourage you to attend, to meet with Stephen Fleury, the regional directors, the local ministry, and members of God's church. I want to encourage you to elevate your spiritual life to the next level, to be ready. It is time to commit to God. So much can happen instantly. It doesn't have to be nuclear war. It can be a personal crisis, a family crisis. It can be a tremendous blessing. Life can change instantly. That is a theme that really impacted me. The underlying message at all three of the most recent campaigns came out of James 2, verse 20, where it says, "But will you know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead?" Having this truth, listening to this program, reading our materials, praying, study, if we're not acting on it, it's of no value. Don't you know, O vain man? You must act. I must act. We have to be doers. That really impacted me over the past 10 days. We're going to take one more short break. And when we return, I want to talk about the end or the last few days of this 10-day period. A very inspiring time, to say the least. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Throughout the Bible, God refers to human beings as His own children. Many people, however, say God just doesn't seem real to them. God is a great mystery. Yet, their human fathers don't seem like a mystery. Why does God seem unreal? In Mystery of the Ages, Herbert W. Armstrong answers that question. In this book, Mr. Armstrong strives to make God as real to you as your own human father. Do you realize that God, as described in the Holy Bible, is actually a family? That He calls human beings His children because He wants to be their father? This magnificent truth, once understood, will help you understand your Bible like never before. Mystery of the Ages will guide you in your study of God's Word, and will make plain this incredible, seemingly unbelievable truth. We would like to offer you this book, Mystery of the Ages, absolutely free, no cost or obligation. In many ways, Mystery of the Ages is about Herbert Armstrong's close personal relationship with God the Father. It contains a powerful message that God revealed to Mr. Armstrong during their constant contact, their continual conversation that lasted for nearly 6 decades. If you thoroughly study Mystery of the Ages along with your Bible, you will get to know God. Request your free copy of Mystery of the Ages today.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM. And this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening today. If you have feedback, please send that to td@kpcg.fm. We'd love to hear from you. I was able to interact with many of the those that attended the campaigns last week, and it's inspiring to hear their thoughts. We play interviews with those that come. Most people are willing to give us an anonymous comment, and it is pretty moving. If you've listened to some of those comments, your thoughts are important to us. It does encourage us. It draws the family together. I couldn't help but think how for some of those in attendance, you could tell they were visibly shaken by the message that they heard. And you could see more than likely that night was a turning point in their life. God really gave them a sobering message and encouraged them to choose life, to choose a positive, well-balanced life, a future. We just advertised Mystery of the Ages, and what a tremendous book. We do need to get to know God like our Father. We do need to really embrace the relationship that they offer, the education that they offer. We've been talking about a pretty sobering subject, and initially my thoughts were to just really try to focus on the positive, and I'll try to do that next time. But I think the end of this program is really inspiring, really encouraging. It should be. We do live in a very ironic time, don't we? It's the time of the greatest evils, the greatest threat, the dangers. There's just global turmoil. There's terrible suffering out there. And at the same time, God has never poured out more revelation than he's doing right now. I encourage you to go visit our website, thetrumpet.com. Click on the Literature Library tab and just take a look at what God has to offer. If you go to a campaign, we have a table that displays almost all of our literature. And it's actually a couple 8-foot-long tables. The books are stacked on one another. You can cover all kinds of subjects. Yesterday, we heard a little bit about the child rearing. Child rearing with vision. Where are you going to get that kind of instruction today? That is really a powerful book, and we see the fruits of that in God's church. Yes, there are troubles. Yes, there is division. We hear a lot about how God is giving us a brief respite or saving America temporarily so we can do this work, so we can get this hope out there. The campaign messages really promote acting on our faith. And that is a message that applies to each of us. Are we listening? Are we teaching our children, loving them, instructing them, disciplining them, as we heard yesterday? I want to encourage you. I want to encourage our subscribers. I want to encourage our members to act on your faith. Dozens of individuals are attending follow-up Bible studies. They're working toward membership. Our regional directors and field ministers, I don't think, have ever been this busy working with new contacts. And it really is uplifting. It's amazing. As you've heard on the programs, we're starting new congregations. We're growing. People are responding. And these campaigns have been a wonderful success from my perspective. But it's amazing with God. He works on multiple fronts. We're active in Jerusalem. We're active all over the world. We have the campaigns going on simultaneous to our youth program, our youth camp. The other night, we had a track and field event. It was just Sunday a few days ago. And last night, we had a faculty home visit at our house. Had, I think, probably 24, actually, it was probably closer to 28 young people there. They're counselors, assistant counselors, the campers that come along. My wife and I were able to share an evening with them. And I must say, it is very much like the millennium. I was talking to Mr. Dwight Falk, and I can't remember if he told me in person or if he communicated it on a Trumpet Daily radio program himself. It's like the millennium out there at this youth camp. I don't want to overstate it, but at the same time, I don't want to understate what is taking place on this campus. You parents are doing a great job with your young people, but we all need to grow. We all need to improve. And that's the same message that is being shared with our young people. It's the same message that God is giving those that attend the campaigns. It's the same message we heard on the Sabbath in a sermon. Now, my wife and I attended. We watched all the campers, including one of our daughters. The other one was in sick bay, sadly. But we watched them participate in this track and field event. And honestly, it was really moving. I wasn't a big track and field enthusiast as a young person, but I think it's one of our best activities. You really see the camaraderie among the young people, the encouragement from those that are watching. It's really a neat activity. Our youth educational program, our youth camp, proves to the teens that God's way works. It's a spiritual education for the young people that's conveyed in the classroom, as you'd expect. It's conveyed during services. But again, if you're watching the YouTube stream, and I encourage you to do so, it is great to see some of these pictures that accompany the TDRs. It's not just today, obviously, it's ongoing. But if you're watching the screen, you're seeing all these young people. You're looking at our beautiful green campus. It's been hot all over the United States. In fact, it feels like it's hot all over the world. And yet God prepared this campus with abundant rainfall. It is amazing the attention that God puts into each and every one of these programs. We try to host the campaigns at a proper hotel. We provide refreshments. We dress up for the event to fellowship with individuals. As I said, we educate through the classroom and through services. Yeah, you'd expect that. And maybe that's what a typical church camp is like. But what I want to really emphasize is that we also teach them through physical activities in sports, during mealtime, dancing, just interacting with one another. They're exposed to some fantastic role models, not perfect, but great role models in our college students, volunteers that sacrifice their time. We have individuals that give up 3 weeks of their vacation time or 3 weeks of their time in retirement to come here and serve. Some have children here, some don't. What a sacrifice. The staff, the headquarters staff, the ministry, they're all out there helping. In fact, at the track event, Mr. Joel Hilliker was running with the campers. I don't think there's too many on the staff that could do that. I guess we have a couple of young graduates that can participate. We did joke around a little bit about forming an old man track team, but I don't think that'll happen. I was thinking a lot about the campaigns where our members serve those that are coming. I was talking with one of our members just this past Saturday, and she and I were saying it's such an advantage for those that come to these campaigns to interact with church members. They mix with us. They see that we're normal. We all have the same mindset. And it really is a great way for God to pull people together. The young people that come to our camp, they come from different backgrounds, different home environments, even different cultures. And as you'd expect, not just because they're teenagers, but because there's so much difference, it can be a little awkward in the first few days. But very shortly, bonds are made, challenges are set before them, and accomplishment is the result. Encouragement, disengagement from pop culture, from devices, just a pure and simple focus on pushing themselves to grow. We build godly confidence through action, through obedience. I think it's in 2 Kings chapter 2 where King David told Solomon to show himself a man. Man up. And how do you do that? Well, his father told him to obey God. Obey God. That's how we mature. That's how we achieve success. That's how we get the happiness that you see on the faces of these young campers. That confidence might come through a public speaking opportunity. It might take place in archery. Perhaps just a conversation with a fellow teen or perhaps a counselor or even a minister. What I witnessed at the track and field night is so encouraging. but we have to do it God's way. There's genuine fun. There's fulfillment for the spectators. There's support all one for another. In the Wonderful World Tomorrow book, it's another booklet you can request from our website. It was written by Herbert W. Armstrong, and it prophesies about the coming millennium and the days thereafter. But one of the points that's made in that book is that it's going to take several generations into the world tomorrow before we're able to remove the influence of Satan and society. You see, problems won't just evaporate at the return of Christ, but the unbridled education of the public, that's when it begins, at the return of Christ. The education of the public, just like camp, a bit awkward at first perhaps, but as God's education is disseminated and people can see it in action, then changes will start to happen. Part of the excitement of a campaign is watching those who don't typically attend or don't attend services with the church and watching them mix with our members. I spoke to a few that had prior experience in the Worldwide Church of God, and they said it was like coming home to hear the truth, to interact and fellowship with members and those of like mind. I always find it interesting with the campaigns. There's so much going on with the work. If you're not on the campaign, you're busy with your job. Those that go on the campaign and they come home, that's all they can talk about. The camp experience is going to be the talk of campus for the next month until we get into school, into classes. It's a way of life that promotes genuine growth and happiness. It's action. The campaigns, I think, in a way, are somewhat like youth camp for adults. It's inspiring to see the fruits of God's education on those who choose to act, those that receive their invitation and overcame whatever hindrance that Satan put in their way, whether it be traffic or timing. I think it's going to be a moment of great regret for our Trumpet subscribers that look back on an invitation or two or three and they didn't respond. As Mr. Armstrong said, God has a solution. He has a way out. He just needs us to choose to act. And as world events prove to us, times can change very quickly. I'm not trying to make a hard sell to scare anybody into acting. That's not what you hear at the campaign messages. But we do know there's a certain reality out there. God does measure in time, and time does expire, as I'm finding with this particular program. I want to encourage you to act, to prepare yourself to work for what lies ahead. Just like the way God teaches through physical activity at youth camp, I want to make some suggestions to you listeners. Please take a moment to wrap your mind around the reality of what we talked about at the beginning of the program. Then think about everything you've heard, studied, watched from God's true church over the years, and then act. Do something with it. Faith without works is dead. Don't be idle. Push yourself like the young people at the track meet or at a dance, or those that have to give a speech. The campers that really excel at our camp share some traits that we'll close this program with. Four simple points. This isn't the perfect recipe, but I think it really is something that's consistent with those that are tuned in to God and are acting. The first is prayer and study daily. Prayer and study daily. That is action. Maybe the young people develop or at least strengthen those habits here at camp. And I couldn't help but think that those that attend the campaigns will also strengthen their prayer lives based on the admonition they heard at the event. The second point is to be physically fit. Be physically fit. Have a willingness to take on new challenges. Don't just fall back into what's comfortable. Step out in faith. Eat right. Exercise, sleep, get outside. We give you all kinds of education and admonition on these subjects too. If we're groggy, if we're lethargic, take small steps. It works. I did a 30-day squat challenge, And I wasn't going to do it because I thought, well, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt my knees. But I was shocked. Within a couple days, my knees felt great. It's amazing how resilient our bodies can be if we just get out and act. The same can be said spiritually. If we just do something, it'll surprise us how God responds. The third point that I have here is to turn off the distractions. Get a focus, a balance in life. Choose to excel. As you've heard, limit time on the internet. Limit time with pop culture. Read books. Challenge yourself, regardless of your age and your experience. The fourth point is encouragement. Work with the young people. Work with the members. Attend a campaign and be encouraged by those that are engaged in the same struggle, those that are trusting God. God's program is phenomenal. His way really does work. I witnessed that over the past 10 days. He's offering us everything. God demands, though, that we choose, that we pursue, and pour our lives into it. God's way is a pearl of great price, as Christ said. Go get that pearl. Well, it's always an honor to be with you. As I said, Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening today. If you care to send in comments, please do so at td@kpcg.fm. Have a wonderful day.